Okay, welcome. Welcome to our PACE session in April. I'll tell you briefly about PACE, what PACE is. PACE is a collaborative platform where we do conversation starters in terms of topics that are related to health or wellness, or just things that we should talk about. We typically use experts or people who may have knowledge about this or experience about the topic from the community. This is purely a volunteer effort. The speakers don't get paid. Nobody gets paid. Nobody has a cost to doing this. The supporters of PACE are essentially Northumberland Hills Hospital, the foundation, the community health centers in Port Hope, the Loyalist College, the Ontario Health Team, IM Care, Northumberland Family Health Team too. So these are the folks. We've been doing this for a few years. And I must say today's topic, I would say I'm surprised, but not as much, has attracted the maximum number of registrants. Typically in PACE, we would have somewhere around 60 to 70 people register. And behind every registration, there might be one, or sometimes people attend as a couple. Today's registrations were 168. So whatever the reason be, it is a significant presence. And the way these topics are chosen is that we ask you, whoever attends, to send us a note what you would like to hear. Once a year, the small group gets together and we pick the topics. And so what I'd like you to do as you are joining in, just put yourself on mute so that there is no background noise. I have the ability to put you on mute, but I'd rather have you put yourself on mute. As you have questions, you may want to put them in chat, or at the end, you can raise your hand and ask them yourselves. The format of this is I'll ask a few questions to get the conversation started for the first 15 to 20 minutes, but then really open it up for questions from each one of you. So I'll start. That was the introduction about PACE. That was the format. Now the introduction about our volunteer speakers today. Dr. Elizabeth Selby and Scott McCoubrey are our speakers for today. They are very well-known people in Northumberland. Beth, as she liked to be called, and I know each other for a while. She's on the hospital board. She chairs the hospital board. She has been very active in the Rotary. You have seen her resume. She has been an active member of many things. But today she's here in a very different role, and she will speak to you about that. She has had a recent experience that brought her to think about this topic and talk about this topic. Scott McCoubrey is the owner and the owner of the McCoubrey Funeral Homes. He is the third generation in his family who has been involved with helping people as they pass on. So he has a very different outlook. This question came up as, we had this discussion. I think Beth and I were having this discussion in a separate group where we were talking about what happens when somebody close to you passes away, what happens to the children, what happens to the surviving people. And the conversation went about how much, what all happens, and we'll start there. So the way we'll go about it is I'll float the question, and then Beth will start, and then Beth and Scott will tag team. So the first question is really, but I have a will. I have will. I have advance directives, what I want, what I don't want, and I have funeral arrangement. Is that enough? Am I organized enough that if I were to die tomorrow, And I have a booklet that here are my passwords for my things. Is that enough?
Well, thank you, Dr. Bhargava, for the invitation to be with Scott and you tonight for this presentation. So, candidly, I would say to this question, no. Certainly, I'm a former Girl Guide, so I like to be prepared. That'll be no surprise to some people. I see Scott laughing. But I would say, given my recent experience, that would not be enough for me to be organized, and it wouldn't be enough for my executor. In addition to the will, I mean, who has the power of attorney for care? Who has the power of attorney for property? What about the final wishes for end of life? Feeding tube, life support, DNR. I used to joke with Barry, if I was going to get a tattoo, I'd get one that would say on my chest DNR, so there'd be no ambiguity when the time comes. What about the person's registration with the Trillium Gift of Light Net Life Network for an organ or tissue, being an organ or tissue donor? And what about the specific funeral arrangements? And then what about that person's legacy? What did they want people to have as cherished mementos, or were there community donations that they wanted to make to charitable organizations that would speak to their legacy? So to come back to your question, that would be enough, not enough for me to be organized, and it certainly wouldn't be enough to give me comfort if I was the executor of this particular estate.
Scott.
Yeah, I would agree, Kesh. I would certainly agree. I would like to thank everybody for coming today. I'm surprised how many people found that this topic was topical, but I'm really happy to see so many people interested in this. Again, with Beth, yes, I would back up a little bit and say you may have a prearranged funeral. You may have come into the funeral home, funeral provider, and have a funeral that you think is prearranged. But if that funeral has not, that prearranged funeral has not been communicated to your loved ones, your children, it may not be the kind of prearranged funeral or celebration of life that works for them. For example, I think there's probably 100 people on this call right now that would say, well, for me, it's not important. Just have me cremated or buried or whatever. But I don't really need anything for myself. But the fact of the bit is, and we all know this if you think about it, funerals are not for the dying, they're for the living. And those are the people that should be included in those conversations. And I think you would find that in many, many cases that I have dealt with, certainly when we've had a prearrangement where the person has come in and said, I just want something as simple as possible. Just cremate me. The family comes in and the kids come in who may not live in the same community, and they'll say, no, that's not what we want. We want something. We want some kind of celebration. We want to commemorate his life. I mean, he's been on this planet for 90 years. We think he deserves a party or whatever you want to call it, a celebration, a memorial. Depends how spiritual, how religious you are, and all that gets to you. But I think communication is one of the first things that needs to be done for prearranged funerals. Yes, I mean, you're talking about all the other practical things that you need to talk about. Trillium Gift of Life is almost never spoken of beforehand. And in my experience, it needs to be. Even if you don't register with the actual Trillium Gift of Life people, if you die in an institution, one of the many institutions in Ontario that works with a Trillium Gift of Life, the nurse after the death, a nurse will come to the family and say, are you comfortable with an organ donation through the Trillium Gift of Life? Now, as you can imagine, that happens immediately after the death. This is a highly charged emotional time. And if the family hasn't discussed this beforehand, it can go wrong very fast. When in fact, the person that who has died would probably welcome the fact that they could, help seven people from my own death could go on living a better life because of a simple organ donation. So that's really important. And I think that everybody on this call, if they get nothing out of this today, think about Trillium Gift of Life, please.
Mukesh, can I pick up on what Scott talked about in terms of communication? Okay. So so Barry has had some ill health for the last 4 years. Now, many years prior to that, we had pre-planned and prepaid his funeral with McCubrey Funeral Home. But communication is really, really critical, because in those few years leading up to his death, we were able to have some really candid conversations about how he wanted, you know, his end to be. And he wanted to know, he wanted me to really articulate what it is that he wanted in terms of, you know, his end of life, the whole visitation, funeral, reception, the interment. And if we hadn't had that conversation, so going back again to Scott's word of communication, you know, this is a really difficult topic to start the conversation. Like, it's like at the IKEA commercial, start the conversation, right? But once you start the conversation and you recognize that it's a twofold purpose, one, to honor the person's wishes and legacy, and to make it really more comfortable, easier for the people who are left behind, the conversations are then easier, because then you start to really refine what do you want? You know, do you want me to make a donation to the Rotary Foundation? You know, because we were both very active Rotarians. But, you know, one of our friends after the service and reception came up to me and said, you know, Barry would have loved today. And, you know, I can't think of a better compliment, because there's no dress rehearsal for this. You get one chance to do it right. Right. So communication, you know, with your spouse, with your children, with the funeral home. I mean, one of the easiest, easier decisions that needed to be made were already made by us. So when the eventuality happened and one of Scott's staff came to see me with the rector, we already knew what we had planned. I mean, I had everything, including, you know, the service that Barry wanted, the psalms he wanted read, the songs he wanted sung. So that, you know, that open communication and knowledge of, you know, how to bring it all together at the end of life really, really helped us as a family, but also helped me honor him in a way that he wanted his wishes to be acknowledged.
So how do you start this conversation? Because often if you are doing just fine, you and your family, you know, if I said to my kids, oh, I want to get organized before I die, and they're like, what happened to you, Dad? What's your problem?
Right. So that'll be an easy start for you, Mukesh, because you can now say to your sons, look, I just had this pay stock on getting organized before I die. And, you know, we need to start the conversation, right? Like, just start it. It doesn't have to be really, really, you know, I don't know, Scott, in depth or really, you know, right, robust right at the beginning. But I mean, there are two things that are, you know, guaranteed in life: death and taxes. So, you know, you got the perfect segue. You and your wife can say, we guess what? We just did a pay stock, and I think we need to start the conversation. I mean, I had 4 years of time to have those conversations. But, you know, I'll show you my file later on, because one of my sisters is my executor. But, you know, if I travel and something happens to me, if I haven't had that conversation with her and left her everything, how will she know to honor what I want?
Mm-hmm. Scott? It reminds me of a story. A family came to me and said, you know, I took your advice, and I thought we'd tell the family what it is that my husband and I are planning on doing. I said, well, how did that go? And they said, well, we started the conversation right after grace at Thanksgiving. It didn't go very well.
Right, Right. So
timing is everything, right? Timing is everything. I will tell you, though, one of the things that we did last summer after a neighbor passed away is I said to Barry, you know what? We need to write our obituaries. They are very hard to write in at any time. They're more difficult to write when they're needed. And we did. We co-wrote ours. And I have, you know, mine in my file. My sister may need to add to it. But it just, you know, because when Scott's staff comes and says, okay, you know, we have the time of death, we have the body, you know, blah, 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 blah. Now we need this, 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 and this, right? And now they're more gentle about that. And I already knew what they were going to need, but I could hand it over. I could hand it over right to Scott's staff and said, here's the obituary. And then that allowed me time to focus on writing the eulogy, right? My sister took the time to put a playlist together. So I wasn't mired down in all those, you know, the minutiae of those tough decisions in those early minutes, because we'd already made those decisions.
So both of you have shared quite a list of things that, you know, what do you want when you're living? How should your end of life be? What should your, you know, when you die, what your funeral should be, what you should be, your legacy, etc. Is there some kind of checklist or something that is out there? So there is something out there that, and so that I think we can figure out a way to get for people who want to, is there a website link? So there is a checklist that people can do for, and this is not just organization of their, you know, whatever ritual they want at end of life. But the second thing that came was, is there help? Like, if I can't do this, I don't have the personality to have this conversation, or there's family conflict in my family, is there help? Do you talk to a lawyer to get this done? Do you have some counseling services? Because not everything will go smoothly. If you say, I have, this is my will, this is what I want to do, and what if three people are fighting over this, or there's no executor? And Scott, you're smiling as if you, you've seen this before, this play out. So why don't we start with you?
Well, you're right. So in so many cases, in a weekly basis anyway, I mean, families don't always get along at the best of times. And I'm talking about nuclear families, never mind families that have gone through several marriages and that kind of thing. So when you have families that are diverse, in that you've got half brothers and sisters, and you've got, you know, your dad's second wife who is, you know, 3 years older than you, and you, there's all this stuff is going on. So that makes things so much more difficult and so much more emotional. So that's why it's important to really jot, as Beth was saying, because Beth's a super organized person, she's got a, you know, a file that's thick on all of this sort of stuff. But what Beth and I were both showing you was, I have the updated version that she just showed you, but there's a journal that we provide, and I'll provide it for everybody that wants one here tonight. They just need to get my contact information. And what it does is it goes through everything that you can think of, as far as, you know, where my bank accounts are, who are named on my bank accounts, where my will is, when it last was updated, you know, all that extremely information, my insurance policies, where are my insurance policies? These are the numbers for my insurance policy. All of that, if you write this all down, and including your passwords for your laptop and your cell phone, I'll tell you about cell phone in a minute, you will find a great relief off your shoulders. Even if you don't go the extra step and prearrange your funeral with a funeral establishment, at least it's down. And now you can say, your family can look through this and go, okay, I know where everything is. It'd be such a relief to everybody if one of these was filled out for everybody. So at the end of today, if you want me to give some contact information, they can. I just had the funeral home order a bunch more, so we'll have lots for them. When we're talking about cell phones or social media, This is a big issue now. Digital property is a huge deal. I know the people on here want, what's digital property? Well, digital property is everything that's in your computer right now that you're looking at right now, or in your telephone or in your tablet, that kind of thing. And digital property is...
Oh, Scott is frozen for some reason. Beth, is, Scott is frozen for you too, right?
Yep.
Okay, we'll wait for him to come back. Scott, if you can hear us, you are frozen, so we can't hear you. You might have to come back, but we'll hold a thought there on digital property. And in the meantime, as you're thinking of questions that are coming, you can put them in the chat so we'll get them organized. Beth, while we are waiting for Scott, your thoughts on if there's family that is not working, or could there's a family conflict, how would you address that in the planning phase or getting the organized?
So we were very upfront and honest with Barry's boys. They knew everything, right? Having said that, I am aware of a familial situation, which I won't go into detail, that it can be a bit of a rough ride for the executor. And, you know, so there's a, something in the, somebody's going to send Scott a quick text. So in my will, just to assure my executor that there won't be any grief, on the top of the last page, I had our lawyer, my lawyer now, I have a hard time with that. I'm a collective person thinker, our, us, not me, we. Anyway, I had our lawyer put in my will, if you contest this will, you forfeit your share. Okay. Right? So I wanted to make it easy for my sisters, one who will be the executor and the other one who will support her because she lives out of the country. I didn't want anybody giving her any grief. So I just had my lawyer put that in there. But again, I mean, full circle, Mukesh, if you start the conversation, if periodically, you know, you say, you know, when the time comes, I don't think you have to use the phrase when I die. When the time comes, you know, I've left you a treasured ring that I'd like you to have. You know, and I have one for each of the boys when we have Barry's interment next Thursday, which would have been our wedding anniversary, because he asked me to make sure that, you know, they each received this. So again, it's communication. So, you know, in my file, you know, I used to call it when I die file, but now I'm calling it getting organized to die file. I mean, I've got the executor checklist, right? I've got Scott's book. I have my will. I have my organ donor registration. I have my marriage certificate. I don't know why.
Okay.
I have my life insurance, my obituary, the service, the cremation details. You know, I even have a selection of pictures, and then I have a sheet of credentials for my my laptop, my iPad, phone, all that stuff. And there's Scott back to go back to talking about digital property.
Right. So go ahead, Scott.
Sorry, I don't know what happened to my laptop, but it passed away. So I'm very sorry about that. Anyway, now I'm talking to you from my tablet. Can you hear me?
We can.
Okay, perfect. Okay. I think we're talking about digital property. The biggest problem with digital property is access. So I'll give you an example of a colleague of mine from Kingston who I had a call from him a couple of weeks ago now. And he had a client who died, had an iPhone. He had all the pictures on the iPhone from the family that they wanted to use during the memorial service, but they couldn't access the iPhone because it either used face technology or a thumbprint to get into the phone. And neither one would work The funeral director even tried to use the thumb of the deceased person to try to open the phone, could not get into the phone. So this is the kind of thing that you've got to sort of figure out beforehand. And what I mean by that is you could download all those pictures from your iPhone onto your deceased laptop, if you like. Then at least you have access to that kind of digital property that I'm talking about. You got to think ahead about with some of that stuff. That's all, because we all enjoy our cell phones, and we all use them now with the higher degree of technology for security. But that just means that it's so much more difficult for us to get that property out of the phone and be able to use it again.
Interesting. No, we have not thought of that. Okay, there's feedback. I think, Scott, it is your phone. So if you put it on mute when you're not speaking, or there's a device. Okay, better. Whatever you did. So, so in terms of social media, when I die, what happens? Like, somebody has to shut down each of my social media accounts, or, you know, because these are also, and we'll talk about fraud that happens. Beth experienced that too. But what happens to the social media presence? Because that is individual. That is not a family, or that is not a thing. How do you work around that space?
So, Mukesh, you have to actually go into the profile of the person that has died. You have to then go through the settings, and you have to cancel the profile. That's the only way to do it. I'm still getting invitations from friends of mine that have died years ago, because the Facebook will just continue to ask for, you know, invite you as a friend. So you've got to actually go into the profile and cancel.
Yeah. Beth, you want to share what should people be concerned about fraud when this happens, or what was your experience about fraud and imposters?
So I surrendered Barry's credit card in early January. So Barry passed away December 26. So after I had gone through all of the important pieces of information, personal information with Scott's staff member, I took his credit card to the bank and I surrendered it. Within days, I received a statement, and there was a fraudulent claim. Someone had made a purchase for just under $1,000 2 days after he passed away. So back to the bank, and then I needed to take a proof of death certificate, a notarized will. I will tell you that clearly in this banking institution, the fraud department and the estate department don't talk to each other, because that fraud charge has not been removed just yet. We're working on it, but it is 4 months, and I'm still having to deal with that.
Wow. So while we prepare, I'll start looking for questions. Any other thoughts, Beth and Scott, and I'll start to prepare questions from the audience and ask people to either raise their hand or a question.
Something that came up to for me a few months ago, and then I had a call from somebody named Mary Brown, because she knew that we were speaking about this sort of thing tonight. And it's what you do with your pets. This is more, you know, in most cases, 99% of the cases, there is somebody that's willing, a family member or a friend or whomever, will take over that pet. But there are cases when that won't happen. And the pet has to go to a pound, you know, a shelter, that kind of thing, which isn't ideal. I think all of us could probably agree with that. But Mary had a couple of interesting ideas, and that is, there are rescue societies out there for dogs. I just got two dogs a couple months ago from a rescue society. And what you can do is you can leave the rescue society an endowment that will guarantee that your dog will get a private owner. And the rescue people are very particular on who will get the dog. So you can rest assured that your dog or cat or goldfish will end up in the right home. And I thought it was a really interesting twist on that.
Thank you.
Lukasz, you asked me to raise a couple of thoughts. So while this makes sense now, the immediacy really kind of caught me by surprise, but I had to quickly rewrite my will and my power of attorney and change my life insurance beneficiary in very short order. So that came as a bit of a surprise to me. I will tell you that my greatest frustration to date is a lack of customer service. I have had an easier time sending back a purchase to L.L. Bean than I have talking to some organizations. You know, you get the thank you very much for calling. Please listen carefully to the following options. Zero is never one of those options. And you just keep going down another layer and another layer and another layer. And I have sat on the phone until my portable phone died and nobody has picked up. So then you start again, right? So that'll tell you that that's been my greatest frustration. But the other thing I had to give immediate consideration to was my personal and home security. I now lock the door, even when I'm home. And I created an emergency preparedness list and have it stowed away in a spot where those who need to know can find it. And I made sure that a neighbor had a key and that periodically they just check in and make sure, how are you doing? You know, and if I'm going to be away for an extended period of time, I let them know. So all of those things came, you know, with immediacy when all of a sudden now I'm living on my own.
Now, so if you may have made the plans together with Barry and you, but you didn't know who is going to pass away first, so it has to be redone. So how often do this document or set of documents, should you change? Because you change your passwords, the passwords get changed, things get changed. Now with cell phones and one-time passwords, if you change your cell phone, the company may be still sending you one-time passwords on your old phone. And there's, Scott, any ideas on how do you keep up to date with this?
Yeah, now you got the two-step verification on top of it, like you said. So that makes it all that more difficult to try to keep on top of all of these things. Your will will only have to be updated when there's a significant change. Now, in Beth's case, because I'm assuming that Barry was Beth's executor and Beth was Barry's executor, you've got all of that. So that has to be changed. The house, usually, if there's a house involved, it usually has both names on the mortgage. You may get that changed before the second spouse dies. It makes life easier for the children. There's all those sort of things to do, but the will really needs to be changed after some significant thing, like the death of Barry, for example, or a change in marriage. You know, Beth gets remarried or something like that. That's when you start have to do that. And again, with the insurance policies, et cetera, et cetera. But yes, trying to stay on top of social media and the passwords and all that sort of thing, I can't do it. I mean, I've got it in my phone. And my wife Sandra knows where to find it because she generally puts the passwords in my phone for me. But she has access to my phone. You just have to make sure that your spouse or your sister or your eldest child or whatever also has access to your digital property. That's just important. It may seem you may not want to do that, but it's very important for them to be able to have access to it. Something else that's come up recently, and this is kind of on topic, is maybe Mukesh, you'd like to speak to this, is radioactive implants. Recently, or more or less recently, the last 10 or 15 years, radioactive implants have been used for various medical procedures. And it came to my association that I belong to, it came to our attention when it was discovered that a lot of these radioactive implants were being cremated, and it was causing, potentially causing problems to the operators of the crematorium dealing with radioactive devices. So what has happened in the meantime is people that have these implants are often denied cremation, which is really causing a problem in my industry, because people are pre-arranging their funerals for cremation, ending in cremation. And then when they get to the actual death happens, they get somebody like me tell them, oh no, we can't do the cremation because, you know, Barry had radioactive implants. He didn't, but you know, that's the sort of thing you have to say to somebody. Very upsetting. It was in the Toronto Star. There's that kind of thing. So again, communication is so important.
So let's go to some questions. And I think there's feedback again. So if you can mute Scott there. So one was a comment from John Hill. There's a new book written by funeral director and financial planner Greg Barnsdale with the title Do Not Ignore Your Mortality. Check. You can check it out online. So great suggestion. Dr. Jackie Gardner-Nix asks, what can you do about pre-arranging your funeral, but you might move to near your adult children who live in other provinces? So essentially is your funeral arrangement transferable? So I yes. make it today here, but now I die somewhere else. Can the other funeral pick it up seamlessly?
Yes. Yes, it's not a problem. The money never belongs to the funeral provider that you make the pre-arrangement with. That's always your money. It's in an institution somewhere, but it's still the beneficiary's money. So that money can travel with you anywhere you go. So if your family's in Vancouver, we simply transfer the money over to the funeral home in Vancouver.
Right. Thank you. Anuja asked, it is great way for memento mori. What is your suggestion on how often do we review preparing to die the folder, which I think you just answered. So that is good. John Matthew said, our pet rescue contract says our dog needs to go back to them if need be. So them meaning, John, like where you got it from?
Yeah, some breeders have that written into their contracts.
Okay. Then Wendy asked, when I made up a binder for our children with the necessary details they would need, one of the sections is all the people they should notify once we passed. They thought this was helpful because they do not know our circle of friends and distant relatives. Yeah, it's very true. And then Shirley Ross said, when I went to the bank to advise them of the death of my brother, I offered the death certificate and they immediately closed the bank account and the credit card. I had not finished paying some of the bills, so this caused some little concerns for me. So you may have automatic payments on something. So just a thought. Suzanne Lawson, suggestion that you always have backup of the power of attorney. It helps if over time the first named person enters dementia or is just not able to make decisions. And yeah. So then Anuja said, Beth, you are so organized and sage. Are you comfortable sharing the folder and subfolders you have created? So Beth's answer is yes. You're nodding. So other thoughts or questions from folks, I have one, Scott, and this is, you know, you make these arrangements and have this, but now you start to get confused. You may develop either dementia or those kind of things, and you start changing these, and you're not communicating. And I've seen this, and with people who may have early cognitive impairment, they get some email and then they go do change their plans. Is there any protection for people that should happen?
So, Mukesh, if I can say, once somebody dies, their remains are now in the possession of the executor. So the executor has the final say on anything. So even though they may have decided to change their funeral arrangements, for example, from burial to cremation or back and forth, and they haven't communicated that and they haven't thought it through, the executor can still override those decisions. So he or she, or the trustee, are the ones that the funeral providers have to take direction from, even though, and this may sound strange to somebody, we have a contract with the people that at the time for a pre-arrangement, we still have to take direction from the executor. Now, most executors wouldn't go against the wishes of the people, but it happens, and they are the boss.
So can you speak a little bit more about how should one pick an executor? Is it your eldest brother you talk to, or is there some, like, how do you pick? Should the person be younger than you? Should the person be disconnected? How do you pick an executor?
In my experience, most executors are family. So in 99% of the time, or 50% of the time for sure, it's usually the spouse. Right. Now, it's in every will, they'll say, in the case of the death of a spouse, somebody else has to be the executor. And in that case, it's almost always two of the children. It's not often just one child. It's usually two of the children. And that's probably a good idea.
Yeah. Right. Any other thoughts or parting thoughts or any other questions? And Tom, you're raising your hand. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Beth, Scott, Mukesh. This has been a fascinating session, and it's really brought a lot of insight to a former trustee. So, having not gone through this myself. Mukesh, I ran out of steam to try and send in the link to my siblings, and I know that they would love it. You said it's been recorded. I'm wondering if you could let us know what the link is to that recording so we could spread it around, because I think this is very essential for people of my generation. And Scott, if we can get your contact details to get that booklet, I think that would be extremely helpful to my family. Thank you both.
Thank you. Tom, I'll tell you, typically PACE recordings like this, we have recorded this, the Loyalist College students will clean it up, take out all the, superfluous things and put titles, etc. But this one, because they're out of session, they have had their exams and they're in recess sort of thing. So you may have to put up with just the bare bones of an exact, recording. So it won't be as polished as it has been in others. Mary Lou Adams, I see your hand up.
Just a comment. I've always felt in funerals that I've attended, the connection of the visitors to the deceased and the family seems to be somewhat overlooked. It doesn't help when you have a lovely book handwritten with a bunch of names of people you don't know who in the world they are, if it's your parent who's passed or something, and you've been separated from the deceased anyway for a while, and you aren't in their everyday life. And it would be so valuable, it would have been to me, to know who Fred Brown was and what Fred's relationship had been and so on. So there's even a little section down the side of the book that says your connection, that the family can then know, three people came and they worked with her, whatever, here, and et cetera. Just a suggestion. Now, I know it's being covered somewhat by the computer, you know, like at the funeral home, there's a place to send in comments or memorial statements and so on. But it seems, you know, maybe that needs to be enhanced somewhat. I just say that to Scott for information. Thank you.
There you go. Thank you. Okay. I'm going to go
old school on you here. Okay. So in the days that when I first started, people would not only sign the book, they would come in, they would pay their condolences in person and say, I worked with your dad. He was a super guy, you know, a man of integrity. That's the kind of thing that they would do. That doesn't happen as much anymore. You don't see the kind of receiving lines that we used to have because they're inconvenient for some people. But that was a great way of introducing yourself to somebody else that may not know what your connection was with your dad or your mom.
Thank you, Scott. So there are a couple questions on the executor. Star has asked, what if the children do not wish to be an executor? And Nancy has asked, why two children for executor versus one?
If the children do not wish to become executors, obviously you've got to go elsewhere. And that happens quite often with, it happened actually in my family where my dad's brother and his wife moved to Coburg, but his children lived in the United States. So they asked me, their nephew, to be an executor. So, I mean, this sort of thing happens. You just got to reach out to the next, you know, down the road, maybe a good friend of yours, you know, somebody that you need somebody that you can trust, because there is a certain amount of trust involved in here, because they are responsible for the distribution of your estate, ultimately. The second question was, why two children? Well, two children is inconvenient, because especially if they don't live in the same town, one may just sort of sign off and let the other person that is closer to town to look after the executorship. But again, it's a good little stop gap. And it's, again, making sure that everything is done above board, making sure that there's nobody questioning that one executor. For example, if I'm the executor of my mother's estate and I've got three sisters, what is their check on me? If I'm not a person of integrity, what is their check on me? If there's two executors, it just makes it just that much easier for everybody.
Selena.
Thanks, Mukesh. This may sound a little macabre, but I think it's really important that people do all of this stuff like as early as they possibly can. The day after you get married, sit and talk about this. Tell your children to talk about it, because my first husband, we were divorced, but he died at 30, and there was, you know, it was hopeless. My second husband died at 50, and I was left with all of the stuff to do because we had never really talked about any of that stuff. And as many of you well know, my son died when he was 39. And my daughter-in-law, there was no will, there was no nothing. And so I think that everybody should be making these arrangements as soon as they can, as soon as they're in a, you know, a frame of mind to be able to do that, when they've been together long enough that they know that they love each other enough that if they die, they want to leave each other something. I think it's just really important that this stuff gets done, not when you get old and you think you're going to, you know, die in the next 5 years. You need to do it as soon as you possibly can. I know I've had a will now for, I'm going to be 84 soon, and I've had a will probably for about 40 years. I had to keep changing it, but that's no big deal. I mean, it costs you a bit of money at the lawyer, but it's better to have a will and have to keep changing it than to die with no will and leave somebody behind with all the work to do. That's it.
Thank you. So in terms of, let me just look at, there are some more questions. So one is to make it early. What is, if you die without a will or without these arrangements, what, other than, it has to be done after you die, and it's a lot of work. Are there other risks to it, Scott, if you don't have these things? Or is it just simply inconvenient?
I'm not a lawyer, but if you die without a will, there's a set bunch of regulations that the government has set out and how the estate will be distributed. So if you don't want to go by those rules, you should have a will. And I'm not saying those rules are particularly penal, but they will, you know, they may not be what you want to do, want to have your estate is distributed. So that's what a will is all about, is just that it's your will, not the government's will, on how this is distributed.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you. So then Irene Ikavanga said the PACE docs are on the NHH website. So yeah, if you go to nhh.ca/PACE, you will have it at some point once our team is back, because we know Jennifer, who makes this all happen in the background. Jennifer Gillard is away. Suzanne Lawson said, I think we ought to do whatever we can to get our adult children to make wills and POAs. They can die too and leave grandchildren who are young and lost. So good point. So great. So we are coming up to the end of questions. Again, thank you, Beth. Thank you, Scott, for your time, and I know, Beth, especially for you, you're talking from experience. And today, as you said, shared with me, today is exactly 4 months to date when Barry passed away, and I knew him well. So thank you for doing this, because I think this has started a conversation for all of us, in our heads at least. And we have some next steps if we want to do that. For the next PACE Talks, please send us thoughts or topics that you may have. If you have speakers that you think are in our community that might be able to speak to it, also send that to me, because we'll meet in the summer at some point to plan the next year's PACE calendar. So once again, thank you, Beth. Thank you, Scott. And thank you, and have a great evening.
Okay, it's just one thing. I promised to give the contact information if people want a journal. So if you want a journal, you can simply go on my website and go through that. Or you just email me at contact@macoubrey, and that's macoubrey.com, contact@macoubrey.com, and just tell them that who you are and you want two journals or a journal, and tell us where you want them sent. We'll mail them to you.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mukesh, for inviting us to be speakers at the April PACE Talk, and we hope that we've been able to share some great information that will help others now and in the future.
I certainly learned quite a bit, without doubt, and I'm sure the feeling is shared by and all the people who are here. So thank you, and you can see them, and thanks. So take care. Good night.
Thanks, everybody.